And now she's back after a little bit of an absence, and that will be due to the snow, but we'll talk about that more in a while. I'm joined in the studio by Penny Hollington of Hollington Associates. Penny is the founder and director of Hollington Associates and has over 20 years' experience of placing people in jobs in Essex and London. Each month, Penny is here with advice on how to secure that job, from interview techniques, what to wear, what questions to ask, research and more. So whether you're a school leaver, you've finished your studies, you're looking to change your career, returning to work after a break, Penny is here to help. Anna ended right on the end of the music there as well.
Good morning.
Now, we have to say that you didn't make it in a couple of weeks ago because you were due to come in because of...
the snow. Yeah. Well, I was all ready. I had my boots on, and then obviously we spoke and you didn't think you might be able to get out of your road.
Yep.
Because you don't have any... You're on a slippery slope.
And they never grit it because it's a close, so they don't bother.
Oh, anyway,
yes.
But I'm here today, and what a beautiful day today.
It's lovely, 13 degrees.
I know. Balmy.
Yes. I always know the weather because I have to read it out, you see.
That's every half an hour.
Every half an hour, that's why. Now, you are from Pellington. Pellington Associates.
I like that.
Penny Hollington from Hollington Associates. So you specialise in finding jobs for people in the Essex area. What sort of areas do you cover, as in what sort of job-wise?
So I work with a variety of different companies, all Essex-based. Mm. Having worked in the market for a long time, I feel that's where my expertise lies, and I can advise clients and candidates really about the general market and what's available and salaries and things like that. Predominantly, I place people within office-based roles, support roles.
Yep.
So things like accounts, facilities, HR, anything that's really a support role within an office-based business, really.
Excellent.
So supporting technical people.
Today, we're going to be talking about apprenticeships and Brentwood School Careers Convention as well.
Yep.
Interview practice assessment day. So tell us about the apprenticeships.
Well, I've talked a little bit about apprenticeships before, but it's come up again, really. The Chancellor announced yesterday that they're looking to invest an extra £80 million to help particularly smaller businesses to recruit apprentices. So it's kind of back in the headlines again. And they've said they're committed to deliver 3 million apprenticeships to start by 2020. So it's obviously back on the agenda. So it's just another thing to think about with apprenticeships. And I'm still being approached by lots of families and who, you know, have children that are at that age and just want some top tips about how best to prepare really for that interview process.
Yeah.
And also a lot of apprenticeship schemes, they do use assessment days as part of that process. So they might bring a lot of people together for one day and put people through various different exercises to decide who they want to offer jobs to at the end of the day. So they can be quite daunting really to prepare for, because a lot of the reason people have those days is to put people into scenarios and see how they react, you know, when they're given that moment to do something. So there's certainly some preparation you can do, but some of it is just how you react to certain situations.
It would be good if we could go back to the old days of, like, not many people, unless you're very clever, going to university, which I always think is a good idea. because I never went. You don't have to. It's a shame that people think they have to go to university. They can't just get out and get into the workplace and start working, because not everybody is for university.
No, exactly. But I think that's why it's good that the focus is back on apprenticeships, really.
Yeah.
So it gives, you know, children, you know, in their last couple of years at school, it gives them other options now. So they have an apprenticeship route. They have, you know, just going out to find a job, but they have the university route. But I think everyone's different as to what they want to do.
Yeah.
Some people leave school and they're just hungry to get out there and get their first job.
Yeah.
Apprenticeships really help people perhaps who just want to get into work and get the experience of actually working in a real life environment, but also get some training and support during that time as well, which is a good balance. And obviously, if people have decided to go to university with a specific idea of what they want to do at the end of it, I think it's good that we've got these different options for people now, because it feels in a way there's lots of choice, I think, and sometimes that can make it even harder to decide what you want to do, really.
Yeah. And it's also about giving young people a chance when you haven't got any experience. And sometimes when you're older, you forget, especially if you're in management and stuff, and you know, you want to take somebody on. It's just giving somebody a chance, because they haven't got the worldly experience, but let them through the door, even if they don't have the qualifications, but if they're eager. Because sometimes, you said, if people have got a passion just to go to work and do something.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we do judge, I think, young people in this country pretty badly. now with their worth. Unfortunately,
I suppose when you read newspapers and social media, you know, sometimes the young people aren't portrayed, you know, very well. And actually, I've been very fortunate to have done some work with some local schools and have helped with, you know, practice interview days and, you know, workshop days. And actually, I've been really impressed with a lot of the young people that I've met that not only, you know, I've done practice interviews and they've interviewed incredibly well, considering they have no experience, very clear about what they want to do and how they're going to plan for it. So I think that's great to see in a lot of young people. And equally, it's great that I think schools are investing a lot in that, giving those children, you know, some good information and good experience while they're still at school, really, to arm them with some tools when they're out there.
Yeah, don't knock the youth of today, that's what I say. And now Brentwood School Careers Convention, that's taking place tomorrow
evening. So I've helped there before, and again they reach out to you know, local businesses or further education institutes and actually bring people together for a careers evening, again just for parents and children to be able to go around and talk to people, again just to get some information and advice about what they might want to do when they, you know, when they finish at school. So I'll be there probably more with the sort of CVs and interview coaching, because I think at that stage it's not necessarily about what job they are going to have, it's more perhaps about what opportunities there. So so I'll be there just to be able to talk to people about maybe, you know, again that preparation of when they get that opportunity and how to prepare for it, really.
Just going completely off, we're not off subject, I was going to say, for dressing for interviews, and we have covered this before, is it because we're going into this kind of, it's very strange at the moment with social media, and you happen to say the wrong thing and people are jumping down your throat, do you think it's still acceptable is it okay for a woman to wear trousers to an interview? Because it's one of those, when I was younger, you would have worn a skirt. I mean, I hate skirts, I never wear them, but you would have worn a skirt. So is there certain jobs, if you're working maybe in London, that they expect you to wear heels and a skirt to go into work? Is that still the norm?
Well, I would be very surprised if you would find that now. I mean, there was a case very recently, I think, that a lady was, I think that was about, was expected to wear heels, or and it all obviously became quite a legal case in the end. But no, I mean, I think what you wear to work is very much around whatever the company's dress code is. A lot of companies will still have, you know, business dress as their dress code, but that's generally, they just want people to look smart, and whether that's a, you know, suit and jacket, suit, trousers, suit, whatever that is. But some companies still are kind of smart casual. So I think actually what to wear for an interview now is still quite a challenge, because you kind of don't want to be completely overdressed. But then equally, you don't want to go somewhere and everyone's in their pinstripes and you've. So I always, if people don't know, and sometimes you don't get any indication when you're invited to an interview, if they can't tell from, you know, having looked at the company or done some research, I always suggest go smart, because it's better to be over smart than not smart enough, in my view. And if you've gone with a suit, jacket, whatever, and then if you feel overdressed, you can always take your jacket off or make that look a little bit more relaxed. But I think companies still want to see that you've made an effort, actually. And if you might have gone a bit too smart, I think they'd respect that more than if it looks like you haven't really bothered.
Definitely. Now, pay as well. Are you seeing with jobs that are coming through that there is a... it's difficult, I suppose. If you've got a job that specifically you might get maybe a woman kind of role or a man's role in companies, but suppose it's depends what it is, really. Although you're not allowed to say that, I don't think. It's just for anybody, isn't it? So maybe putting my foot straight in it. But have you seen a difference with pay? Because there's this big thing. I mean, I'd never really thought about it because I worked over in Dublin for years. I worked with lots of guys and I pushed and I ended up on more than quite a lot of the people that were working there because I was a bit pushy. But I never had a problem. There was never like the thing of me being a woman in, because it was a male dominated company.
Well, obviously, again, that's been in the headlines, hasn't it? Very much about equal pay. I mean, really, when I work with a company, we are looking at, you know, we put together a job description or we put together what the company's looking for, and then we work together to set, you know, a salary that we think is the right salary range for what that company needs and the skill set they need. And then really, that's where we go from there. So, you know, within my conversations, that you know, that would never come up. And I think with the market I work in, you know, it's a very diverse market. So, we have lots of different people working. So it really comes down to what the company needs, what skills and experience that they're looking for. Mm. And I can also advise, knowing the market as I do, you know, the talent that's available and what you need to pay to get that talent. And then we kind of work out what salary we feel that role deserves, really. Mm. So, I think, you know, salaries... I think for people working locally, there's obviously always going to be a disparity to working in London. But mm-hmm. I think companies do, you know, recognise that if they want good people, you know, you need to pay the right salary, or certainly a good enough starting salary that you can encourage someone in, with a view that if they're good, you know, and they progress, that salary will then hopefully increase alongside there as they develop.
Yeah, that's what you want. You want to go in, and if you're a manager, you want to have people that work under you that don't give you any headache or any problems, and then it makes your job much, much easier. You have a great time, and that's it. You just have it. You go home and you sleep. Whereas if you've got people the one thing I would say is timekeeping. That used to be. And I would never really accept, even if somebody's brilliant at their job, if they can't keep, because it's not fair on the other people that work there. I hate it. I hate people that are late for work, and it's consistently every day that they're late.
No, it is true. And again, I think working within this area, you know, there's lots of things we always look at as well when I'm working with a client to find somebody, because logistically I'm always looking at where people are travelling from.
Yeah.
And, you know, some businesses I might work with might be on an industrial park, so straight away, you know, someone's going to need probably their own transport to get there. And although sometimes the distance as a crow flies from where they live to where the company is might not seem very far, when you actually work out the logistics of getting there. So they're all things as well that I work very closely with, because if it's a normal long journey every day and then you have a problem and it becomes a long, long journey every day, that's a big thing to do twice a day, every day. So I think you've got to have a distance that you're travelling that's realistic, and also allowing for the fact that if something goes wrong, you know, even on a bad day of travelling, it's not going to be too bad. And again, a lot of people who work in around this area may well have worked in London, and part of their reason for being local might be because they wanted to perhaps reduce their journey time. But you know, I've met people over the years that will travel a long way if they're doing a job that they absolutely love, and actually the journey doesn't become a factor. I think it's when you fall out of love maybe with a job that those are the factors then that might, you know, stop you or make you want to look for something else. But timekeeping is important, but also being realistic about your journey every day to make sure it's achievable, really.
And one thing about, if you are going to be late for an interview, for some reason that you might have set off 2 or 3 hours, but there's a problem, what is the best thing to do? Because you're obviously going to be prepared with all the details about who you're meeting, what time the interview is. So what's the best thing to do?
The best thing to do, because actually, if something has gone horribly wrong, either on a main road or, you know, if you're on a train that's broke, you know, the company will know that actually has really happened, because it'll be very easy to know if that's happened. So if you've left it with plenty of time and that's happened, then just make contact with, if you've got the interview through a recruiter, make sure you speak to your contact there, or if you've done it through the company directly, just give them a call as soon as you know that it's either going to be very tight or, you know, even if you think you may still make it, but it's going to be a little tight, just give them a call and explain the situation. And actually, I would be very surprised if anyone would have a major problem with that, because they will know, especially the time, if you think about the time you're going to be phoning them, even then probably you would have had enough time. So they will understand. Mm. The only reason that it may be a problem, obviously, if they've got a certain time allocated, it may just be physically they may not be able to still see you. But all I would suggest is don't leave it to the last minute to phone. As soon as you're thinking this could be a little bit tight now, make that phone call, because they will really appreciate that.
And you can't lie anymore either, because people can find out so quickly on by looking at the AA map. You go, the train's derailed. I was sat there for ages, and like, it wasn't.
No,
well, years ago you could lie. I mean, years ago, you can't do that.
No, and as you said, you know, if you're on the A12 or something and you're stuck, and then, you know, it's very easy. Well, you just have to listen to your travel report,
and then
they'll know.
And you'd never leave home again.
I mean, what I always say to people, in the ideal world, you know, do the journey, go and see where the company is, and actually do that before the interview. Because there's nothing worse when you've arrived somewhere and you can't find the building. So I always say do a practice run a few days before, because it just gives you that, you know, bit of confidence, you know where you're going. I always suggest to people to arrive potentially arrive there or actually in the area about half an hour before, yeah. and potentially walk into the building about 15 minutes before. Because if you're driving, you've just got time to sit in your car and just kind of, you know, prepare yourself. And I think it just gives you that little bit of time just to recover and take a deep breath before you actually walk in. So probably 10, 15 minutes to actually walk in to the building is what I would advise. But some things do are beyond our control. But like you said, if you've planned well and actually it's completely out of your control, just make them aware as soon as you know.
I've done that before for interviews. You just turn up. I mean, this is in the days before you could find anything out online. Just turning up and going, I don't know where the hell I am. Because you used to have a look at your people go, A to Z, what's that? It's a book you carried everywhere, an A to Z.
But like you said, I suppose there are no excuses now, really, either not to be able to find somewhere or not to be able to communicate now. So actually, the focus is on you to make sure that you've prepared and you know you're planning. I always say to people, plan for like the worst case scenario and then plan for another one. And then, you know, if you're getting a train, for instance, plan for the fact that the train might be cancelled, the one after might be cancelled. You know, just use some common sense, really. I mean, like you said, being late for an interview, you know, even if it's not your fault, is obviously always going to start you on a bit of a back foot. So, you know, plan.
Yeah, and don't be late. Don't turn up late. And that's all I've got to say. If I was employing you, you'd be out the door. I think you meant to get three warnings and out. I don't play by those rules. I'm like, get out. You have to do things so sensibly nowadays. You just can't fire people. Now, if you want to find out more about Hollington Associates and Penny, if you go to all the W's, hollingtonassociates.co.uk, and Penny will be able to help with advice on, you help people with their CVs, because most people's CVs are awful. I'm thinking about my own. And you can get that put right. And there's certain things that businesses look for when you send. So if you've got a bad CV, you won't even get through the door. So CVs are the most important thing.
It's kind of your first impression, really, with a potential employer or a recruitment agency. So it's, you know, I can just help people make sure that it looks as good as it can, and it has as much relevant information that's easy for someone to see, so that you don't miss that first opportunity to at least progress to maybe a face-to-face. And so with that comes interview coaching. And I just talked to a lot of people about, you say about how things have changed. You know, I think if you're in the job market now for the first time in a long time, you know, I've been doing this for over 20 years, and you know, how you go about finding a job now is very, very different. So sometimes it's just good to speak to someone to know how to go about it, and I can just give people sort of the confidence and the skills to make sure that they know exactly how they can go out there to find the best job.
And we also said Penny's very friendly. So years ago, when you would have walked into maybe some of these places in London, you turn around, there'd be like 100 women all just staring, and it was predominantly women in the recruitment companies, and you would feel very uncomfortable, and you'd walk in and think,
it's not very welcoming,
but you know, and that's what you need when you go in. So it's like, hi, I'm Penny, and it's all, and you relax, and it makes people relax rather than being, because it's a nervy thing going into recruitment.
I think the whole thing can be quite intimidating, especially either if you haven't done it before or you haven't done it for a long time. So I think hopefully I'm here just to be able to help people. And you know, the feedback I get from a lot of people, which is great, is that, you know, technology now has taken up a big part of how we recruit, and actually they feel that it's just nice to be able to meet somebody face to face and actually talk and get that advice. And I think that face to face is really essential just to help people, you know, on the road, really.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for coming in. Lovely to see you. Got a nice picture of you earlier as well, my new phone.
Yeah, well,
portrait mode.
It's black and white, very forgiving.
It's lovely. I've taken loads of pictures myself. Like, oh, you wouldn't even recognise me. I'll show it to you afterwards. If you want to find out more, it's all the W's, hollingtonassociates.co.uk. And if you are looking to get back into work, or you're coming out from university school, or just want to change jobs, and you're looking for a job in Essex, in the areas that Penny was talking about, give Penny a call and pop in and see her. And she'll be lovely, smiling away.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Michelle.
You're welcome. Just coming up to 10:51. Here is, I think this is Rosie with Never Get Over You.